This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, Rick. Come on. We call it
the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTBN studios, where I always am, and where I always am on these Monday nights, talking wrestling with, of course, my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how was your long weekend, sir?
It was very well, JR. Good evening to you. And good evening, Place to Be Nation, episode 462 of the longest, and holiday stops nothing, running episodic gold. It was a very nice weekend. Very relaxing. Did a lot of stuff. I'm sure you had a lot of picnics and various other weekend sundries. Clear me if I'm right, but the picture you took of the big pot, you were there? That was you were at a bake? Is that what that was?
I was at a clam boil, yes.
Pretty awesome, huh? I don't think... didn't see much of... I've seen you eat fish, but I've never seen you as like a shellfish guy. Never seen you eat it, so I was surprised. Did you enjoy it? It was good.
A man of many delicacies, Scott Criscola. You know, it was good. But they threw everything in that pot. Like, there's charisse in there, sausage, hot dogs, potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, everything goes in the pot. So, it was
awesome.
That was good. I had clam cakes and chowder for lunch, and then that was the dinner. So, rain did not stop us. It was a good time, nonetheless. And then it did stop raining later in the night, so we got a couple hours outside. But it was, it was a good time, and then...
Good.
Even know what the other days were. Oh, I went to the big 90s con. Oh, I had my auction fantasy draft Friday night, and that was fun. And then Saturday I went to Mohegan Sun for the food truck festival, followed by the I Love the 90s Party Continues concert.
Yes. How was that? Who was it again?
It was, why don't we bring Kelly Nelson? Kelly, how are you?
Oh, hey, Kel. Sorry, buddy Jack. We didn't want you in the... No.
He's in the back of the van.
Yeah.
Kelly?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I did just cut out for a minute.
Oh, sorry. Were you hanging out with Jimmy Jam? What's going on?
Yeah. Were you asking about my weekend?
No. I was about to talk about the concert I went to Saturday night, but I felt like we were leaving you hanging on the line, and you weren't even there anymore.
Yeah, it keeps cutting out, guys.
Yeah, okay. Can you hear us
now?
No,
my internet keeps cutting out.
Oh, okay.
I can hear you. Can you?
Yeah, we can hear you. We're on air still. This is all live, pal.
Yeah, I know. It's just the internet.
Got to start over.
Really, I think I don't know. Okay. Sorry, right. But it's been cutting in and out through the whole first like few minutes here.
It's that heat, you know, I can't handle the stress of the Canadian heat.
Yeah, I'm melting, that's for sure.
Okay, so anyway, this concert, Scott, was it was CNC Music Factory opened up, and then it was Color Me Bad, which one of the members has gained copious weights. It was
Color Me Fat.
And his voice was not quite holding up. But, you know, they tried. Biz Markie, which was pretty cool. He came out, did his thing.
Awesome.
Montel Jordan, Montel with two L's. He was really good. Yeah, he did a couple of songs. And, of course, the So We Do It he did. And that brought the house down. He looks and sounds like the same. Roger, actually, once he saw him on stage, he's like, I think I saw him at the food truck earlier. And it was him.
Along with the Color Me Bad guy.
And that guy was definitely cleaning up the food trucks. But Montel is a big like preacher now, or like minister, and he was like talking about his book and everything. So, and then who else? So we had him, and then we had Coolio, which was quite the scene.
Wow.
Yeah, he was interesting, doing his thing. And he actually had a band with him, and he was like, he seemed like a guy that wished he had his own full concert and tried to condense it into like 25 minutes, you know? He's like introducing the band like one song in. But Gangsta's Paradise with a live band and a guy doing the sax through the whole thing was pretty awesome, I will say. That was that was a highlight.
That's
and then TLC was the headline act, and they it was basically like a full TLC concert. They played for like over an hour, and they had a live band too. And they did like every song from all of their hits from the early album and like the 90s one, the late 90s. And then they also, I guess, have like a new album. They did a few songs from that. So they played for a while, but they did like every song, and they were pretty good too. They did not replace Left Eye. They just, whenever it was like her solo rapping, they just played it in like over the speakers or whatever.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was cool.
Well, there was only one Left Eye. All right, so I guess there was what? Crazy, Sexy, Cool? That was the earlier decade one, right?
Yeah, I mean, they did every song. Yeah, I mean, they did like every hit off of that. Red Light Special, Why Can't We Just Be Friends, Baby Baby, Waterfalls. What was the other big one?
Scrubs.
Yeah, then
no
they
scrubs.
Did those. They did No Scrubs. They did Unpretty. And then there's one other old one we're missing. And then they did like four or five off the new album sprinkled in, which were kind of meh. But it was good. It was a good time. And then they had a DJ play, and he was spinning in between every set. So he was like just playing all different 90s hits and everything. It was an interesting crowd. They were packed in the Mohegan Sun Arena. It was pretty jamming. So it was nice. A good time. And then we went and saw a cover band. One of the owners of Boneheads joined a new 90s cover band. So we saw them play for about an hour and a half as well afterward. Go home around 2:15. So it was a jam-packed night.
Oh, so that's why. So I got the Benny picture at fucking middle of the night.
I was just getting back to Coventry at that point. But it was a good show. I recommend it if it ever comes your way. Well, I mean, I guess it was your way. But if it comes your way again... or you, Kelly, if you're a fan of those groups, I recommend checking it out. It was a good time. And the highlight of the whole thing, though, was the promo for the Ship Hop Cruise that's going down in January that has all those artists plus more. Salt and Peppa is going to be on the cruise, Vanilla Ice, Rob Bass. And it's $845 a person for four nights. Goes to Cozumel, leaves Miami and goes to Cozumel. And we looked up flights were only about $250 at that point in January to Miami. So you could, you can go all in for about $1,000 a piece. It's, it was interesting. But the ad that they played, it made sense, like why all of a sudden they're doing this tour, like trying to pimp this cruise. And it's like straight out of Saturday Night Live, like all these hokey graphics and pictures of all the artists. And like they listed off like 95 names that are going to be on this cruise. It's so ridiculous. And Ship Hop is like the best name ever. So I recommend, I'm interested in going on the Ship Hop cruise. Not the Ashley cruise, but the Ship Hop cruise.
That's funny.
This is how we do it.
Yeah, no, Montel was
good.
Eating
the food truck.
I would say Montel probably held up his voice and like overall aura held up the best. He was like, he didn't look like he aged or sounded like he aged. Like he hit every note. Coolio was basically hammered out there, but he was, when he did Gangsta's Paradise, he was good. And TLC did a good job too. For a Red Light Special, they brought a big TLC fan on stage, and she gave him like a fucking lap. Chili gave him a lap dance while they were singing. So that was pretty good. But no, I enjoyed it. It was a good time. So there you go. How was your weekend, Kelly?
Well, I work in retail, so I worked. But now it's my 3-day weekend here. Last night I watched a bunch of wrestling at my pal Travis's house, who, Scott, you just talked to him recently.
Yes.
Main event. Yeah. We got into Slaughter and Patterson, that whole feud. We got into some New Japan, All Japan from the 90s, or from the 80s, actually. Mm. And, yeah, it was a good evening. Awesome.
No, he was fantastic. I'll talk more about it later on. But he was great on Main Event last week, talking about the whole Sexy Star debacle and some other stuff. And he was talking about your guy's stuff. So, he was fantastic. He'll definitely be returning on the show. Definitely.
Yeah, cool.
All right.
But we're talking about the past. Not the present. So, JR, we got a busy month of November. We are in our home office this evening. Kelly finally has his own desk. But we'll be somewhere else in a few days. So it's going to be a very busy November of 1986. So why don't we hop in? Because tonight it is the 24th of November, 1986. The Monday probably before, I'm assuming the Monday before Thanksgiving. So big show. Big show from Madison Square Garden, 33rd Street. You want to talk about a big crowd? This was about 1907. Of course, JR always – or JR always – Gorilla inflates it to, 20 billion. The other half of the roster was not exactly anywhere near being at the Garden. Mm-hmm. They were at the Tingley Coliseum in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Jesus.
Crowd of 2,132. I'm guessing that was – the gym at New Mexico State, where the pit is, or University of New Mexico, they call it the pit. I'm guessing that's where it is. I can't see there's another arena in friggin' Albuquerque. So I'm guessing this is on campus. But here's your...
I can't imagine Dirt FS ran New Mexico that many times in history. Was that ever like a spot that they ran? God, I don't remember them going there.
It doesn't say... usually on Graham Cawthon's The History of WWE.com, he'll usually put the WWE's first visit to, and it doesn't say it. So
how
I don't
do you
know.
Spell
I
mean, it? T-I-N-G-L-Y?
T-I-N-G-L-E-Y. Tingley Coliseum.
Oh, Coliseum.
Okay. Tingley Coliseum, Albuquerque, New Mexico. 2,132 in the building.
It looks like it's still open. Originally built as a rodeo and horse show auditorium located on 300 San Pedro Drive.
Perfect for wrestling.
All right, so here we go. It's home to the I don't think it is the pit. So it's home to the New Mexico Scorpions ice hockey team, who was there for 10 years. The Albuquerque Thunderbirds of the D-League, that were there for 5 years. They would both move to the Santa Ana Star Center in Rio Rancho. Tingley Coliseum holds just under 10,000 seats. And beginning last year, was the home of the expansion Duke City Gladiators of the Champions Indoor Football League. Entertainers appear to Tingley include WWE, Wham, UFC has been there, Motley Crue, Jay-Z, the Bee Gees, Jackson 5. Some pretty big names have rolled through there. The Chili Peppers, Ozzy, Fleetwood Mac. Hosted the 1987 Miss USA pageant. Floyd Mayweather Jr. fought the second fight of his career at that Coliseum. And the PBR, the Bull Riding Series, has held stuff there as well. So there you go. It is not the pit. It is its own encompassing building in Albuquerque. Okay.
So it probably smelled like horse shit, because I'm sure the rodeo was prevalent in the late 80s.
And drugs.
All right, here's your card. It
smells like drugs.
It smells like drugs.
Albuquerque, yes.
All right, Butch Reed, who? We'll get to him. Defeated Steve Gatorwolf, who we'll never hopefully get to ever again.
Hopefully they just leave him in fucking Albuquerque.
Don't leave him in the fucking desert. Dan Spivey beat Moondog Spot. Mike Rotundo defeated Moondog Rex, so the new U.S. Express defeated the Moondogs in separate matches. Who's that guy? Another guy, ex-WWF guy, we'll talk about him, defeated I can't even say that match because two guys we may talk about soon. Here we go. Tito Santana, this is probably the match of the night. Tito fought Jake to a 20-minute draw.
It's not a match.
That's probably the match.
Yeah.
The British Bulldogs defeated the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov, and in the main event, the Junkyard Dog defeated Randy Savage by disqualification.
All right, good.
No, I was going to say, but there's guys that I'm not going to say because I'm sure they'll debut down the line and we'll get more into them when they come here. So, All right,
here's what's going on since our last chat a week ago in October. The 11-1 superstars, Randy Savage, took on Steve Yaffe. While the match itself was not significant, a move Savage used on Yaffe was in a foreshadowing of future events. Savage hit Yaffe outside the ring with Yaffe's throat hitting the guardrail. On the 11-8 episode, Bobby Heenan bought the contract of Hercules Hernandez from Slick. At the end of the episode, we begin to see the heel turn of the Honky Tonk Man as well. We'll talk about him in a couple weeks after he was booed during his match. He states he doesn't appreciate the reaction he's getting from crowds, especially considering he has shaken a lot of greasy hands and kissed a lot of ugly babies. So instead, they had a vote of confidence campaign to say yay or nay for Honky. On the 11-15 episode, we get an announcement from Captain Lou Albano that he's retiring from the WWF to focus on raising funds for MS. And on the 11-22 episode, we got our first encounter between Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage for the IC title. And this, gentleman, was a pretty famous episode because Ricky Steamboat's throat injury occurred when Randy Savage dropped him across the guardrail throat first, left him there, came off the top with an axe handle. Steamboat was gasping for air outside. Savage rolls back in and gets the count-out win. After the match, Savage pulled Steamboat the ring and drove the ring bell into his throat twice from the top rope, and of course backstage had an altercation of Bruno Sammartino, and that would put Steamboat on the shelf. We'll talk more about that in weeks to come for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A lot to come from that the beginning of that storytelling. All right, why don't we hop in our announcers? Mean Gene's gone, thank fucking God.
Oh, yes.
We are back to our normal team of Gorilla Monsoon and the Lordship Alfred Hayes.
Yeah, Gene definitely fucked up the chemistry. I was glad he was out of there.
Yeah, no, it's gone.
All right.
All right, what do we got for match uno?
Yes, our opening match does feature our old friend Billy Jack Haynes taking on Cowboy Bob Orton, a rematch from September. If you remember, Orton stole that one from Billy Jack. Gorilla talks about how BJ has been steamrolling his opponents, but this will be a tough one for him. Al believes Billy Jack's role will end tonight. Orton's out with Jimmy Hart, and the Ace has a plaid jacket on. It says Hot Bob on the back and is also wearing a kilt which basically looked like a skirt. Billy Jack gets a nice reception as he glad hands his way to the ring. Al says it's a must-win for both guys, and even though it's an opener, it could be a main event anywhere in the country, while Gorilla mocks Ace's skirt. We open up with a lockup as Gorilla says Orton has a speed and cunning advantage. Orton lands a shoulder block, but Haynes comes back with an arm drag, and we reset. Al puts over Billy Jack's patience, and we reset with a lockup that leads to more back-and-forth trade-off of offense until Orton lands a shot to the grill to stun Billy. Billy Jack fires away with right hands and chops and gets a near fall. Orton bails outside, and when he comes back in, Billy Jack brings the heat some more, eventually running Ace into Jimmy Hart to a big pop. Orton and Jimmy embrace outside as they regroup. Orton slowly comes back in, and we get another lockup as Hart barks at Gorilla. Orton takes control of the top wrist lock and then lands some shots to the gut and head. Billy Jack reverses a whip, leading to Orton running his shoulder into the post. Billy Jack goes to town on the arm, dragging Ace all around the ring. We get some talk about Adonis, and Al says, though Piper drove him out of wrestling, we thought he is now back. So he has returned from that absence we had discussed a couple weeks ago. Orton begs off, lands a quick jab to the jaw, but Billy Jack comes back with a snapmare and a stomp and an elbow for a one count. We reset again with Billy Jack eventually grabbing the arm and working it over some more. He hits an atomic drop, and that sends Orton flying to the floor. The Ace comes back in and lands a jab and chokes away with Jimmy Hart's tie before dropping Billy Jack across the top rope with a hot shot for a two count. Orton follows with a shoulder breaker for two and loads him up for the superplex, but Billy Jack punches free, crotches Ace across the top. Billy Jack chops away and hits an inverted atomic drop, but Orton clubbers him in the head, and when he ducked down, Billy ducked to a punch and grabbed the full Nelson, but both men fell to the floor where they traded blows out there and eventually get both counted out. The match was fine. I thought it had a weird cadence where it just kind of kept restarting over and over without much flow. Like, Ace would get a little bit of offense and Billy Jack would just take control, and it felt like we were back to the opening shine, like, over and over. Nothing wrong per se. There was some good stuff hidden in. It was a little sloppy at times. Better than the openers we usually get for MSG, but a little bit disappointing considering Orton was involved. So I just went 2 stars on this, Scott.
I actually went a star and a half. Your official match time, 13:43 to start the evening. So we're going to have some long match times tonight. And this is I think it's the longest match of the night, 13:43. My only thing, I mean, it was okay. Yeah, it did have this weird restart. And Orton is really, I feel like he's stooging so much more now than he used to, even when he was with Piper. And it's taken away from his ability to really work a good match. This definitely should have been better. I know I'm probably one of the few people that actually like Billy Jack Haynes in the ring. I liked him in NWA. I feel like he wasn't used as well or properly here as he normally is and was in Crockett. But this is kind of a mess because you have two good workers who could work well together and did their thing. And I think Orton stooging because he's got Jimmy Hart and he's part, you know, they're trying to work this whole thing with Adonis being gone and everything. I feel like it's taking away from what a great wrestler Orton is, and it's turning him into a putz. And that makes the fact that this was not a clean win for Billy Jack even worse. Do we really need a double count out for this?
Yeah.
I mean, this was stupid. That was a dumb ending for this match. After Orton stole the match, you think Billy Jack can get it back, and they don't even let him. So that made no sense whatsoever. But I gave it a star and a half.
I guess if the theory is Orton's feuding with Piper, you know, you kind of probably want to protect him a bit. I didn't mind the finish. If the match had been better, I don't think the finish really hurt too much. We're used to it in MSG openers. Like, draws are nothing new. Do you think a time limit draw would have been better than the double countout?
Perhaps where they keep brawling, or Orton, since he's stooging for most of this match, maybe stalling and killing time would have helped. I don't know. But the match definitely should have been better. And I blame that on Orton because I think he's not working as much in ring as he should, as he honestly should. So, star and a half for me, Kel.
I went 2 stars. I thought this was a pretty good broomstick performance by Orton. Yeah. I'm not high on Billy Jerk Haynes, as I've established over the weeks here. But he was getting into more silly sort of Terry Funk stooging territory, but it was entertaining. He had some really good bumps. I love the patented bump that he takes to the outside where he like slides to the ropes and it looks like he could break his neck if he wasn't careful. I thought this was going to be a 20-minute draw about halfway through it. It was worked pretty slow, arm bars and such. So I made that note, and well, it was kind of close. It was a draw, but it was a double count out type draw. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with Billy Jack, actually. He's been in a holding pattern pretty much this whole time. He hasn't had a big win yet at MSG. He's had draws. He's had losses. So it's really, for a guy that I remember being pushed a lot more than when I was younger and watching this in real time, I just find it odd that he's not winning any of these matches.
Right.
But yeah, Orton was in, like you mentioned, JR, he was in a feud with Piper. So yeah, got to protect him to an extent. But yeah, it is what it is. We've seen all these poor openers, a lot of draws, a lot of countouts and stuff. It's just the typical undercard. But for the most part, yeah, I enjoyed a lot of it. But yeah, 2 stars.
Okay. I don't know. I just think Orton's just totally lost his ability to put on a decent bell-to-bell in-ring match. And the manager thing is turning him into like a typical annoying, like, stooge wrestler. And if you start that way, I'm fine with it. But when you were a good in-ring worker, even as a heel, and now suddenly you're putzing around with skirts and kilts and stupid something Orton normally doesn't do, and that's fine. You want to add the wardrobe and get the feud going, but to just not wrestle anymore and just do all this putzing around, just, I don't know, bother me, because Orton's a better wrestler than that. But anyway, there we go. All right, JR. Next up.
All right. Next up is our second match. As Pedro Morales, takes on Hercules, no longer Hernandez.
Oh, God. Even worse.
Not a very sexy match on paper here. No. Herc is back after a month off and now managed by Bobby Heenan, no longer with Slick. Of course, his contract was purchased. Pedro's still kicking around, eating up space. He does get a nice ovation. Gorilla says Bobby paid a lot to Slick for this contract, and Al said Heenan wants him just to be called Hercules now, no more Hernandez. Gorilla says Herc wants a crack at the WWF title, and may see that pretty soon. We get stalling and feeling out as Al reminds us that he saw Herc down in Florida a few years back. Gorilla says Heenan cut Herc's hair and beard and had him slim down a bit. Pedro finally lands some big right hands, enough to drive Herc to the floor. Herc takes his time getting back in as Gorilla talks about Pedro maintaining his weight all throughout his career. Herc lands a blow to the gut and loads with more right hands and elbows, but Pedro reverses a whip and lands some punches of his own, knocking Herc back outside. Herc returns and ends up leveling Pedro with a clothesline and getting right to work with power strikes. Herc snaps over a suplex but was lax with his cover and only gets 2. Follows with some elbow drops and got 2 again. Pedro would dodge an elbow drop and got fired up as Gorilla tells us the Latin blood is running hot. Pedro unloads some blows and gets a small package for a close near fall, which the crowd really bit on. Pedro sends Herc over the top of the backdrop and it's a backbreaker, but Heenan yanked him out during the pin cover. Pedro chases Bobby around and caught up, but Herc sneaks up and rolls up Pedro for the win. Actually, this was solid. Not nearly as bad as I expected it to be. I mean, not good, but they did a lot of the basics okay with a lot of strikes. I like the finish, too, because it's kind of showing that Bobby now can really help Herc as a manager. Kind of gets over that partnership. And I thought it was a nice win for Herc. I went a star and a half on this one.
Yeah, that's what I went with as well. I was surprised this late for Pedro Morales. I mean, it was actually Hercules was the star of the match. He bumped around really well at the beginning and made Pedro look better than he's looked in quite some time, I thought. And you know, it's this is the Pedro of almost 1987 here, so we're not seeing too much exciting from the guy, but I actually thought he was going to steal it with that small package.
It did seem like that was a good near fall. I mean, everyone bit.
Yeah.
And I guess I'll give him credit because they've kind of gotten that over as this fucking finish on all the shows. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's won. I think that has been his finisher for all his wins for at least a year here. So, yeah, it was over. And I thought, you know, it's plausible in MSG.
Yeah, for sure.
That even in late 1986, Pedro will get a friggin' win on Hercules. But no, I mean, it's good. And Pedro still had value. So this was a good victory for Hercules to have as he's starting out. You mentioned the Heenan interference. And yeah, it's added something to Hercules. And he's going to be on a bit of a roll going forward. And Pedro is, I don't know if we're going to see too many more Pedro matches at MSG, actually.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's totally okay.
I actually gave this 2 stars. I thought it actually wasn't a bad match. It was one of Pedro's better performances. But again, and I like Hercules with Bobby. I think they're a good pair. But here we go. Why does Hercules get a clean win and Billy Jack doesn't? We already know there's chemistry. We already know that something's starting there. So this isn't out of nowhere, because they've wrestled already numerous times in the spring. So we know that there's something going on there. So why does Hercules get a clean win and Billy Jack has to get double counted out just because they want to protect Orton? You give Billy Jack somebody else. I just don't understand the logic. I really don't. Having said that, I'm glad that
why do you think Billy Jack still needs to be so protected, though? I guess that's my question.
Well, it's not protected. That's not the right term. He's a babyface who's moving up the ladder. He's going to probably face a guy like Hercules. So why stick him in dumb double countouts and have the heels win clean? I don't get it. It's not protecting. It's promoting, if you will. I don't get it. I know. Probably, I'm sure I'm in the minority because everybody hates Billy Jack, but that's a dumb reason to be in the minority.
No, I'm just curious why. I'm just curious why you feel so much like he needs a win. That's all.
Because he's moderately new. I mean, he's been around since what, May, probably, or June, and this is probably only what, his second guard match, both with Bob Orton. And if you're gonna promote this fresh baby face who conceivably could have, if he had stayed in NWA, probably could have replaced Magnum TA and been NWA world champion, much to Kelly's consternation. But, you know, I just don't understand why he's got to fuck around with matches with double countouts when he could be beating stiffs like Rene Goulet clean, or, you know, we mentioned Steve Lombardi, who's in a match later. I just don't get it. I just don't get
it. Yeah, I agree. No, I don't understand it either. And he's been in about four matches at least at MSG, because he had one against Beefcake, I think, yep, that he lost, or he didn't, or he won by counted or disqualification. Like, he hasn't had a clean win. Yeah, but hasn't been facing any of the lower guys, really.
Right. My point is, if you're promoting a guy like Billy Jack, but you want all these heels protected, then don't have him face him. Have Billy Jack face, you know, fucking Barrio or something. I don't know. Somebody to that, a heel you don't mind, you're not worried about having to protect as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to promote a fresh guy like Billy Jack, it just makes no sense.
That's true.
That's all I'm saying. And I mean, Hercules winning's fine. I mean, Pedro's not going to win. I mean, really, let's get a grip here. But at least it was a good match. And that small package kind of actually took me by surprise, even though you knew he was going to win. It still took me by surprise. And he wrestled a good match. But I mean, I know we see him. He's in for a good hunk of 87, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I remember seeing him on a lot of Boston Garden house shows. I don't know if we'll see him here in a lot in 87, but I know he's in Boston a lot in 87. But anyway, your match time 9:07, which is pretty good, and it was a fine match, better than I thought it was going to be. I was pleasantly surprised, and I like Hercules with Bobby. I think they're a good combo. You know, I always talk a lot on our show here about certain heel characters working well with certain managers, and Herc is a Bobby guy. I think that's a good guy for Bobby to have, you know. So that was a good choice to have Bobby with, have Hercules with him. So there you go, and Herc gets the win. Speaking of guys we like matched up with, we want this guy matched up with the unemployment line, but sadly he's not yet. Go ahead, JR.
Another interesting one on paper. George the Animal Steele's back this month, everyone, taking on newcomer, or relative newcomer, Kamala. Ugly on paper. Kamala been hot since his return, and in theory, maybe a cool battle of the monsters, but Steele's really on fumes. The Wizard and Kimchi usher Kamala out, and the crowd's just in awe of his crazy presence. Steele charges the ring and is a maniac and has crazy animalistic confrontation with Kamala, who's just jumping up and down like a nut. The two continue to pace and gesticulate around. The crowd's buzzing. Steele tastes Kamala's paint and then chases Kimchi off the apron. Kimchi distracts Animal again, and this time Kamala attacks, knocking Animal to the floor. Steele comes back and stomps on his feet and bites and clubs away. Kimchi gets up. Steele wipes him out and cracks the Wizard. Kamala grabs Wizard's horn and decks Steele with it right in front of the referee, which was awful because the ref's like looking right at him. Kamala then hits a big splash and splash off the top rope for the win. Kamala drops another splash after the bell, and Steele gets carted out. And I'll tell you, this was crazy. Like, the atmosphere is wild, and probably might be my favorite like face George Steele match of all time. Both guys went all out in the absurdity. It felt like a jungle showdown of two beasts. The crowd's in awe the whole time. They're kind of buzzing, and Kamala just squashing him fast made sense. And I had fun watching this. I only went a star because it is what it is. But I actually thought this was a pretty cool just kind of battle of wild animals. What'd you think, Scott?
You know, it's funny. I gave it a half star, but I still fucking loved it. I agree with you. It was exactly what it needed to be. Enough of George Steele's protection and everything. Kamala is obviously lined up for something. And now, here we go. Normally, George Steele would get protected, and this would end up being a fucking ridiculously dumb finish. But Kamala didn't have to deal with double countouts and crap. He got put over by a guy that we've noticed has been kind of a dick when he needs to be. And instead, he gets a clean win. And a quick one. Your time is 3:16. And a quick one. Exactly. There was no mistake here from beginning to end what needed to happen here. None at all. It is obvious that Kamala is a top-flight heel. He's been a great heel throughout the decade, all over the world, as we know, both guys. I mean, world-class and Crockett. We've seen him everywhere, AWA. We've seen him everywhere. So he's a legit guy, and you kind of know that he's probably a guy that they may move up to title shots with Hogan. That's so here you go against a babyface that nobody fucking cares about anymore. And they did the right thing, and he put him over. It needed to be done. But I agree with JR. I mean, I only gave it a half star because it was kind of trash, but that was just the in-ring part of it. The whole theater of it was top flight. And, you know, stepping on his toes and everything. And then, I mean, a top rope splash. Let's give Kamala some credit, guys. Climbing the top rope, didn't short the splash, and hit Steele pretty stiff. So I'm going to give Kamala his props on that. That's where most of that half star comes in. It goes to him for that. That was pretty badass. What do you think, Kel?
Yeah, I really like this whole package as well. This was a great, you know, destruction of a beloved longtime star in the territory. And Scott, you say they don't care about Steele, but shit, he got one of the biggest pops of the night coming out and has pretty much on all these shows. I mean, as much as we don't like to give him credit, I mean, the guy was super over.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I was being facetious mostly, but you're right. No, you're right.
So that's why this works so well, is that the crowd loves him, and they just saw Kamala, this scary, you know, Ugandan giant, come out and just basically eat him up and spit him out. I really liked the way this one went, because it made Kamala look like the baddest motherfucker in the territory, basically. Big time stretcher job, like serious stretcher job, where they actually like tied down his head and all that stuff and treated it really seriously with updates, you know, later on in the show. Like it was really well done how they put this over. I went a star and a half. I gave it like maybe an extra half star just for the whole, you know, production of it and the way it really made Kamala look great. And yeah, I mean, this was using George in a great way, taking someone that's been around for a long time, isn't gonna, he was still being used, God, against Savage into 1987, but he has value in that. If you want to make someone a star, he rarely ever lost. Even at this late stage, he rarely ever looked this bad. I can't recall George ever losing a match like this. So
no, it was a great use of him. And it almost pays off all those, you know, bullshit months of him winning or something.
Ugh,
you know,
God,
whatever, getting protected with this, where Kamala just murders him, and it definitely makes you feel like Kamala's getting moved up, and that they think highly of him. And no, I mean, the feel of this was just, yeah, there's two animals just going at it and clashing. Like in that first moment when Steele's like kind of pacing around and Kamala's jumping up and down in circles, it's just this crazy feeling, like just, yeah, two thing, you know, animals in the jungle, like ready to clash. I thought it was really well done too. It was fun, and the updates actually aren't bad. As we'll talk about those as we move forward, but it was a cool moment. It was one of the cooler matches we've seen, and like I said, definitely my favorite Steele, better than anything. You know, I love Randy Savage, but anything we've seen with those two so far. So that's that is for sure. So let's head to our next match, and this is a guy Scott mentioned earlier, and that is Steve Lombardi taking on the Poet Laureate of the WWF, Lanny Poffo. And Lanny graces us with a poem as usual about the Mets and works in all the other New York teams as well. Al says Lanny's a nice young man. This is rough on paper based on Lombardi's previous matches, but we'll see. Poffo pushes Lombardi to the ropes and the two traits in basic offense. Poffo eventually grabs control and sends Lombardi to the floor with a head scissors takeover. Al says Lombardi's in for a long evening, and Lanny's been using him tonight as training. I love it as much as this shit on Lombardi, like openly. Gorilla lets us know the animal's okay after having some impaired breathing and is headed to the hospital for x-rays. Lanny works the arm, but Lombardi punches free and slams Poffo to the buckles, follows with a nice backbreaker. for one and then throws Lanny to the floor. Lombardi works a chin lock and a front face lock as Gorilla and Al bag on Steve's trainer. Lombardi continues to hammer away, nabbing a near fall with an inside cradle as Gorilla calls Lanny supple. Lombardi bashes Poffo with a back elbow for one and then goes back to the chin lock. Gorilla says Lanny's lethargic right now as he dodges a charge and starts to kick and punch away. Al thinks Lombardi's out of gas as Poffo pelts him all over the ring. Lombardi goes to the eyes, slams Lanny, and then heads up top as Al laughs at him going up to the top rope. Lanny pops up and slams Lombardi to the mat. Lanny heads up, hits a backflip splash for the win. Fine enough, step behind most matches. Lombardi, I thought, actually looked better this month, but it's clear he's limited and he has a ceiling. And Gorilla and Al is talking shit on him constantly. The whole match isn't going to help him in any way. And Poffo is good as always. I want a star and a half on this. Pretty much all Poffo. What'd you think, Cal?
Yeah, I didn't really like this one that much. Lombardi, yeah, he's limited. He's boring, basically. Yeah. I mean, chin locks, front face locks, dull, a lot of boring chants. And Lanny, ever since he's got this strange feminine-looking haircut, oddly feminine-looking, he's lost a lot of his pizzazz, I think.
It's definitely affected
him. He lost a lot of being cool.
It's like Samson. It's hurt his in-ring ability when he cut the mullet. The Lombardi, do you think it's weird they didn't just like keep using Mike Sharp in this role? Like you know, he's kind of basically Lombardi, just better. So it's odd that we don't really see Mike Sharp as much anymore. I'm not complaining because I wasn't crazy about the matches we saw his, but He seemed to, like, Lombardi seems like a poor man's Mike Sharp. You know what I mean? Like, same kind of look and gruff demeanor, but Sharp has a little bit more workmanship around him and kind of knows how to perform a little bit better. So it feels like, you know, they could have been using Sharp in this position.
And I believe him and Poffo, Sharp and Poffo, did have an actual decent match way back when that we reviewed. But, this one, it just didn't do it for me. Poffo's new haircut has kind of coincided with him now being almost he did win this match, but it's against Lombardi, but he was getting squashed in previous outings, and you know, we're not going to see too much ahead for Poffo that's going to blow us away, I don't think. Yeah, I thought it was a poor match. I only gave it a half star.
I agree with JR. I gave it a star and a half, mostly because Lanny and the Mama's Family haircut. Steve Lombardi's just not a good wrestler. Why don't we just fucking say it?
No, he's awful.
He's fucking terrible. Fucking terrible. I don't know why he's even getting 9 minutes.
Yeah. What? There's a reason. There's a reason he's there doing this, but go ahead.
I wasn't going to go there. Your match time, 9:58.
True.
But, I mean, this fucking sucks. I mean, Steve Lombardi should not be getting 10-minute matches. This match should have been like 5 minutes. It's bullshit. But, it was a good little poem with all the sports teams, even though the Knicks were awful, and we'll talk more about them later on. But, 9:58 for this. The middle was really dragging. It was kind of sluggish, but Lanny did the best he could. Steve Lombardi's just not good. stick to superstar squashes for 2 minutes and be done with it.
Don't go chasing waterfalls, Steve Lombardi.
Yeah, exactly. Please stick to the rivers and lakes that you're used to. Yes, rivers and lakes are superstars and challenge. So there you go. Poffo gets the win. Your match time, 9:58. Now, JR, one of the highlight matches we had going into this evening.
It's a night of surprises, everyone. So up next, we have the Magnificent Morocco, who I think is top 10 on Will's list for the GWWE, taking on Hillbilly Jim. Another rough one on paper. It's a tough paper week. Been a while since we've seen the Hillbilly at the Garden. Morocco's out with Fuji as they smirk and chuckle to the ring to a chorus of boos. Gorilla talks about Morocco bulking up, says he's bigger than ever, and Al says it's all muscle. Morocco's also wearing a kilt and enters to bagpipe music. Hillbilly dances up to his theme, and we're set to go. Al says the entire population of Mudlick is watching this one. Not sure how, since they're not in New York. Morocco plays to the crowd. Hillbilly comes over and yanks his tights down onto the kilt and then does some typical Hillbilly fairy machinations, like his old friend Uncle Elmer used to do.
The little hand thing he does.
Oh, God, it's awful.
He stole all of Uncle Elmer's crap. That's pretty much what he did.
So stupid. We get lots of stalling as Morocco tries to get the kilt off until Jim finally attacks and clobbers him and Fuji. Jim whips Morocco hard to the corner, sending him over the top to the floor, and then grabs the kilt and plays around with it. Jim slams Morocco, begs off, and works the arm for a bit until Morocco bails again. Gorilla says Morocco and Fuji claim to have mind-to-mind communication and don't even have to talk. Morocco comes back in and takes control, kicking away and working the Asiatic spike. Jim powers free and drills Morocco with a boot on a charge and then lays in another big boot. Jim hooks at a bear hug, but Fuji comes in and hits him with the cane for the DQ. And Fuji gets fucking vicious here, just beating the piss out of Jim with the cane, ripping his overalls off and destroying the ribs. And the match was fucking terrible, but the finish sucked as well. But the post-match attack by Fuji was awesome. This was crazed. I was like, what the hell has this Fuji been for the last few years? This is out of nowhere. Morocco probably should have just won, but whatever. I thought this was really hot. I enjoyed it. The post-match. The match itself was garbage, but the post-match was really good, and I thought Fuji looked awesome here. It's a night of surprises. Mr. Fuji and George Steele give me like my favorite performances for each of them of all time. I went half a star on this guy, and it's all because of that post-match attack by Fuji. When he tears the overalls, it just keeps smacking him with the cane. It was nuts.
Yeah, I gave this a half star, but it's very rare that I say this, and Will having Morocco in the top 10 is probably one of the few things I'll agree with it on.
He's not in his top 10. Come on.
Damn it, he's in my top 10.
He's never going to make his list.
Then, as usual, I agree with nothing Will says. But, nah. This is it was okay. I mean, Morocco definitely is starting to medicinally help himself. So, because you could tell he was pretty geeked at this point. He may be starting to climb up the ladder of getting some awards, if you know what I mean, later on. But the ending was silly, but I mean, fucking Fuji, wow, he actually showed up, and you always bitch and moan that he fucking does nothing, and finally he uses his manager wiles and comes up with a pretty cool beatdown. I was very impressed. A lot of fun. And, you know, Hillbilly hasn't been on much, right? When was the last time we actually had Hillbilly in a match at the Garden? It's been a while.
Yeah. I don't think it's been quite a while. Yeah.
So yeah. It's good to have him back, and it's good without his asshole relatives. So I was pretty stunned. I mean, the ending pretty much for me takes up the whole thing for me.
The last time was him and Hogan against Stud and Bundy in April.
Yeah. That's right. Yep. So it's been quite a while.
Yeah.
I liked the ending. The match was kind of, but I was cool with it. So, not bad, Kel. Not bad.
Yeah, it was basically an angle rather than a match. Setting up.
And your time was 7:06.
Yeah, basically setting up an issue between Jim and Fuji going forward. It was there wasn't too much to it, other than, and my notes are mostly about Hillbilly's like strange kind of quasi-homosexual moments throughout the match where, you know, he sticks his hand up Morocco's kilt and what was going there. Later when he gets the kilt off, Hillbilly puts it on like he's an old maid or something, so now he's into a little bit of cross-dressing. Actually, when his overalls got ripped at the end, I was half expecting him to wearing like pink underwear or something.
It's funny, too, because you look at Hillbilly and it's like, why isn't this guy, why does he wear overalls? He's like pretty good shape. Like, you know, he's got like a good look, a good build. I'm surprised that Vince didn't want him out there in tights. I guess his Hillbilly fetish is bigger than his big man muscled up fetish. I don't know. But you think he would have had him out there looking all shredded, you know?
Yeah. In another, you know, territory, or even if Vince had a different idea, yeah, he could have been, you know, a different kind of wrestler. He definitely had a pretty good body. He was very tall.
Yeah.
But yeah, with the overalls, I mean, that's his like a Superman's cape sort of thing. Morocco's full on, you know, stall mode here. And yeah, like you said, Scotty's getting bigger and bigger with each passing month. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. These two guys, they're not really going anywhere at this time. But the Fuji thing, that's cool. I mean, it gives Fuji an angle, and yeah, I mean, it plays up a savage side to him, vicious side to him that you very, very rarely see. And I'm interested to see the payoff to this whole thing. I went one star on the match.
All right.
Well, always, as the best thing we do, take a break after a Hillbilly match. Interesting show so far, JR. Very entertaining. Maybe not in ring, but a lot of fun kind of histrionics around it. So I've been pretty entertained so far.
Yeah, no, me too. It's actually, match quality's been up and down, but the surrounding antics have been really good. It has not been a boring show like we've had as of late. There's been some interesting stuff, and it definitely keeps your attention. It's been a solid one so far.
What do you think, Cal?
Yeah, same reasons. I like, the whole package. The Kamala Steel match was cool for the post-match angle. Hillbilly Jim in Morocco, like I said, was mostly just an angle. The crowd's super hot. We got a packed house this time. I think the previous few Garden shows, the attendance had dipped actually quite low for an MSG crowd. So now we're back in the swing of things. And we got a big, big match coming up right after the break.
All right, so why don't we take now. That break? Yeah, let's do it. When we come back, we'll dive into the second half of the show. So we'll be right back after this. Enjoy the final Yacht Rock song of the year here on the Place to Be podcast. It is the end of the Summer of Yacht Rock Part 2, I guess, right? Episode 2, whatever you want to call it. Second annual Yacht Rock Summer. It's been a good run. We've had a lot of good Yacht Rock themes. Of course, Yacht Rock will continue on the app. Well, it's still on. When's it on the radio still? Middle of September? Is it until the 21st?
I think so, yeah. I think it's still on channel 70 till the 21st, and then 311, I think, is the everyday channel. So,
yeah.
Bang it out, Benny. Bang it out, Benny.
Don't tell Benny to bang anything out.
Oh, all right. Not banging it out.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Headbanger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where... What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, so you better not miss it, because I'm on it.
Nation, we are back checking out episode number 462 of the Place to Be podcast, looking back at the November 1986 Madison Square Garden house show. I can't believe we're already almost through 1986. Seems like we just started. And yeah. I think we're like 80. We'll talk about this, I guess, but 87 feels like more like the modern-ish era, so I'm curious to see the transition from 86 to 87 as we move along. Scott Criscolo, though, it is time for the Pop Culture Corner, and the way you rattle off these info and facts sometimes, I wonder if you're even human when you're doing it. You're kind of like a machine when it comes to pop culture. And speaking of humans, of course, the Human League playing underneath us here tonight as our number one song in the nation this week in 1986. And for more about that kind of stuff, let's turn it over to Scott for the Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And yes, the Human League. Some of you may remember the more well-known song, Don't You Want Me, which came out, I don't know, maybe 3 years earlier, I think. Maybe 2 years earlier. Don't you want me, baby? That was the first. That was the more well-known one. But this is Human by the Human League. They're number one. They usurped last week's number one, which was Amanda by the band Boston. Ah, we love Amanda. At number three was True Blue by Madonna, as Madonna continues her ascent to being great. Number four, our first, I think it's our first taste of Bon Jovi, Bad Boys from Jersey with You Give Love a Bad Name, as Slippery When Wet came out, looking at my Bon Jovi expert, probably a couple months before September, so a couple months, Slippery When Wet has been out, so this is, I think, the first single, You Give Love a Bad Name. Number five, Take Me Home Tonight by Eddie Money, baby.
The Money Man.
I know JR likes the Ticket to Paradise commercial for, what is that, Geico? But this is Take Me Home Tonight at number five. Number six, Word Up by Cameo. That's a tremendous one. Good top 10 this week. Mm-hmm. And of course, with our house show Monday the 24th, this came out 2 days before, Saturday the 22nd. Number seven, The Next Time I Fall, little Peter Cetera. This is a little yacht rockish. Yes. Peter Cetera and Amy Grant. Number eight, Hip to Be Square by Huey Lewis and the News. Number nine, The Way It Is by Bruce Hornsby and The Range, which kind of ends our run of good songs in this countdown. And number 10.
No, that's not bad, though. That's that was the Impetus for Changes by Tupac, right? It's not a bad
that's
song.
That's true, yeah. That's just the way. Yeah, but I heard him sing it live, and he's terrible now. And at number 10 is Little Lionel Richie with Love Will Conquer All.
No,
so there's your top 10.
Yeah, that's a good week right there. That's a solid offering.
Solid offering. And we needed a solid offering because we'll be losing our beloved Yacht Rock on our show, so we needed a good Billboard top 10 to get us back in. And we did that, led by Human by the Human League. And that came out 2 days earlier, November 22nd, 1986. Let's go to the... JR, this is everything is clicking on this evening here on the Place to Be podcast, because wait till you see what the number one movie is this weekend. I think I gave you a hint a couple days ago on the thread. Maybe it was last night on the thread. Okay. Yeah, it was last night because I was doing it. All right, four movies came out, and two of them are pretty fucking great. So, at number four, it only made $14,926, but it should have made $14 bazillion because it was Body Slam.
Oh, nice.
Should have made more than $14,000. Wow. This is horse shit.
Jesus.
People doing Canadian money, Kelly, it'd be $14 bazillion.
So this came out, you sure? Because this, so Wikipedia says it came out May 21st, 87.
Well, let me click on the, the site I use doesn't have like.
Okay, so this is later. The film was slated to be released by Hemdale Film Corporation November 86, but it never saw a wide theatrical release and was instead released right to VHS. Yeah.
There you go. So okay. No wonder it only made $14,000. Yeah. It was not a wide release.
There you go.
Horseshit, I say.
No.
So did it come back out in May of 87? Or so that's kind of confusing.
Well, when we get there, we'll check. Maybe we'll look out and it'll be that week. But, yeah, very weird. But, all right, so that's why it's not wide release, because that's why it only made $14,000.
Of course, starring Dirk Benedict, Roddy Piper, Sam Fatu, our buddy Tonga Kid, Kelly Martin, Tanya Roberts, Captain Lou Albano, Afa and Sika and Oi, Sione Valahili and Tom Cassette, Charles Nelson Riley, Billy Barty, John Astin, and of course other wrestlers such as Ric Flair, Freddie Blassie, Adnan Al-Kassi, Bruno Sammartino, and Alexis Smirnoff, all making cameos throughout. Hmm. I remember always looking at this in like the video store, but just always choosing real wrestling instead. I always like to look at it and be like, oh, should I get that? No, I don't want to waste this trip and not get wrestling. So there you go.
It was very good. It's been a long time since I've seen it, though. I gotta see it again. You seen it, Kel?
Y'all be back in the 80s. Yeah,
yeah, years I gotta ago. See it again. I gotta watch it again. All right. At number three, that made $3.5 million. It is an action film, JR. It is called The Wraith. W-R-A-I-T-H. The Wraith.
The Wraith. Bright lights descend from the night sky, revealing a sleek, all-black Dodge M4S Turbo and Scepter driven by a helmeted, black-clad figure. In the town of Brooks, Arizona, Packard Walsh, the leader of a gang of car thieves that coerces people with sporty cars into racing for pink slips. He controls everyone through intimidation, including Kerry Johnson, who he views as his property. Kerry's boyfriend, James, Jamie Hankins, has been mysteriously murdered, leaving no trace. Kerry, who was with him, was hospitalized and has no memory of the traumatic event. Starring Charlie Sheen, Matthew Barry, Sherilyn Fenn, Randy Quaid, Clint Howard, Nick Cassavetes, Griffin O'Neill, and on and on from there. There you go. Any knowledge of this movie?
No. Don't remember whatsoever. I'll have to check it out, though. Mm-hmm. Good action film. Number two, an adventure film making $11,834,302. It is called Firewalker. Sounds like a gimmick in... class or
it sounds like a Boneheads thing. Let's see here. Firewalker, the film. Okay. Norris and Gossett play Max Donegan and Leo Porter, two soldiers of fortune whose adventures rarely result in any notable gain, befriended by an inscrutable one of mystery, Patricia. Patricia's map leads them on a quest for treasure in Central America. Chuck Norris, Louis Gossett Jr., Melody Anderson, Will Sampson, Sonny Lindham, John Rhys Davies, Ian Abercrombie, and on from there. John Hazel.
Good movie. Good movie. This one I remember. It's a very good movie.
Of course, Ian Abercrombie is Mr. Pitt from Seinfeld.
That's right. Now, the number one movie of this weekend, it made $47,483,002. Although I feel, JR, I feel it's not right to not have Mr. Jeff Machado on the show right now talking about this movie. Because it was, you ready?
Yeah.
An American Tale.
Nice. It's
there you go. I told you.
Big
get
time.
It, get it ready.
Big time.
A whole new world.
No, it's not a whole new world. Awful.
It's
whole new world is Aladdin.
It's Fievel, though.
No, Fievel's somewhere out there.
Awful. Who cares? They sing fucking shitty Disney songs. Just do the movie.
This wasn't even Disney.
I don't care. The two songs are. Just do the fucking movie.
The song wasn't either. And Shaska, in 1885, the Moskowitzes, a Ukrainian Jewish family of mice, live with a human family named Moskowitz, are having a celebration of Hanukkah where Papa Moskowitz gives his hat to his 5-year-old son, Fievel, and tells him about the United States, a country where there are no cats, if only. The celebration is interrupted when a battery of Cossacks ride through the village square in an arson attack, and their cats likewise attack the village mice. Because of this, the Moskowitz home, along with that of the Moskowitzes, is destroyed. In Hamburg, the Moskowitzes board a tramp steamer headed for New York City. During a thunderstorm on their journey, Fievel finds himself separated from his family and washed overboard. Thinking that he has died, they proceed to the city as planned. And, of course, on and on from there. Philip Glasser voices Fievel Moskowitz. Amy Green, John Finnegan, Pat Musick, Dom DeLuise, and no one else really important. Great movie. I was definitely into this big time as a kid. I still have my five old dolls. It's in my son's room in pretty mint condition. They made a second one, not as good. But yes, it was an American animated musical adventure film, family comedy drama film produced by Don Bluth and Sullivan.
Did they add any more genres to this?
All right.
It was a great adventure, comedy, drama, horror.
Box office hit, making it the highest grossing non-Disney animated film at the time. Success of it, Land Before Time and Who Framed Roger Rabbit, prompted Steven Spielberg to open his own animation studio. So there you go.
$47.5 million that weekend.
How do you mix up Aladdin and American Tale?
Because I didn't watch I didn't see either movie, and I like both songs. Who the fuck cares? This is my corner. Shut up. All right.
Corner sucks.
You suck. You're going to suck at your football picks, too. All right, but before we do that, though.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, No. I'm milking this. So you can piss and bitch and moan and do your bullshit.
Didn't we do this last week already? How many times did they win?
Shut up and stop whining.
Ugh.
Shut up. The baseball season's over. It's a shame D'Amato's not on. I still love you, Kel, but D'Amato should be on right now.
No, yeah. You guys can celebrate shit that happened 22 years ago.
Who cares?
I was pulling for the Mets.
32 years ago.
Time stops for everyone.
32 years ago, as we're celebrating it, the anniversary. Go ahead. And the anniversary of the seventh guy going on the DL in the last week having surgery. We're going to celebrate the World Series.
Mookie Wilson struck out, single to right, grounded out, and then sacrificed. And that was the bunt that Gettman fielded and threw high to Spike.
Your dad was rooting for the Mets. You and your little six-year-old fucking turd fucking five-o clothes probably rooted for the Mets, too.
I'd rather be building a fucking wheelchair ramp than listen to this shit over again.
I will put you in a wheelchair ramp if you'd like, but here we go. The New York Mets were your 1986 world champions. Piper won the bet. Pay him off, Bobby.
Yes, he did.
Piper won the bet.
Mm-hmm. He should have bet.
Team
they'll never win again.
Now, so yeah. I'm enjoying this now. Got it, Kel? I know I pretty much have one more than you do, so that's all right. Anyway.
Well, when we get to 1992, I expect like a full celebration
episode. Yeah. So. I guess because Mookie Wilson played for them, too. So, all right. Now, Mr. PIC, let us take the field.
Oh, God. Go from Coke to Roids.
That I'll agree with you on. All right, it is week 12 of the 1986 NFL season. Let's hop right in. We begin at Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego, where the Chargers take on the Los Angeles Raiders. Mm. Kelly, reverse. Kel, you first.
Sorry, say that again. Raiders and who?
And the Chargers from Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego.
Raiders.
Yeah, I'll go with the Raiders, too.
Jim Plunkett throws for 348. Raiders win in overtime, 37-31. Let me see what he threw in that game.
Guess.
I'm sure he threw a decent amount, too. Let's see. Fouts threw for, yeah, Plunkett, 23 of 40, 348. Oh, Fouts didn't even play.
Good.
So there you go. His backups did. So there you go. They still went to overtime. All right, next, let's go to Giant Stadium in the Meadowlands in a game of harbinger to come as the New York football Giants host John Elway and the Denver Broncos.
Hmm.
Jer?
It's a tasty one. I'll go with the Giants at home.
Kel?
Yeah, me too. Yeah, Giants at home.
John Elway threw for 336 yards, but a pick six to George Martin rumbling. It's like one of the memorable moments of that season for the Giants. Rumbling like 75 yards for a pick six. Giants win 19-16. Let's go to Foxborough for the defending AFC champion New England Patriots hosting the Buffalo Bills, Kelly.
Oh, got to be the Pats.
Yeah, I got the Pats.
Pats win 22-19. Jim Kelly threw for 250 yards anyway. Let's go to Cleveland to the dump where the Browns host the Pittsburgh Steelers, JR.
I feel like the Steelers always shit over the Browns, but this is the rare little stretch where the Browns are better, so I'm going to go with Cleveland at home in the dog pound.
Okay.
Yeah, Browns were one of the better teams in the league at this time, so yeah, I'll go with them.
Brady Carzar throws for 414 yards.
Jesus.
Browns win in overtime, 37-31. Let's go to Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. The Bengals hosting the Minnesota Vikings, Cal.
Bengals.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess.
Boomer Esiason throws for 252. Bengals win 24-20.
All right, perfect so far, Kelly. Five and five, both of us.
All right, Soldier Field in Chicago. Your defending world champion Chicago Bears taking on the Green Bay Packers.
I will go with the Bears.
Yeah, Bears.
Close game, closer than we thought. Bears win 12-10 in a low-scoring affair. Weather must have sucked. Let's go to the Big Sombrero, Tampa Stadium in Tampa, where the Bucks host the Detroit Lions. JR?
I will go with the Detroit Lions.
Okay. Kel?
Yeah, I'll go with the Lions, too.
Bucks are terrible. Lions win 38-17. To the Astrodome we go. The Oilers host the Indianapolis Colts. Kel?
I don't think either team was really great then, but I'll go with the home team. I'll go with the Oilers.
Yeah, home team.
Warren Moon throws for 294. Oilers win 31-17. Not bad, guys. Not bad at all. Mm-hmm. To St. Louis we go. The Cardinals hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. JR.
KC on the road. I'll go with the, I'll go with the Cardinals at home.
Kel?
I'll go with the Chiefs to change it up.
Cards win!
Yes.
23-14. Let's go to RFK. One of the greatest rivalries in all of NFL football, the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington Redskins. Kel?
Skins.
Yeah, Skins.
This begins the 2.5-year slide of the end of the great one of the greatest coaches ever, Tom Landry. Redskins win 41-14. The Cowboys were fucking brutal at the end of 86. And then the next 2 years weren't that much better. All right, we go to Candlestick Park, the San Francisco 49ers hosting Mr. Campbell and Mr. Dukes, Atlanta Falcons. JR.
Niners.
Yeah, Niners.
Niners throw a shutout. Suck it, Campbell. 20-0.
Nice.
To the Kingdome we go, where the Seahawks take on the trash bag crap Philadelphia Eagles. Kel?
Oh, I got to go with my Eagles.
I'll take Seattle.
Well, you suck, Kel.
Nah.
Seahawks win 24-20. Dave Craig throws for 298. Let's go to Anaheim. The Rams host the New Orleans Saints, JR.
It's Kelly's turn to go first.
Oh, no, Kel, I'm sorry.
No,
it is your turn.
Okay.
It is your turn.
Rams.
I'll go Saints.
Eric Dickerson rushes for a buck 16. Rams win 26-13.
Girls on fire.
And on Monday night at the Orange Bowl in Miami, the Jets, Jets, after winning that epic game at the Meadowlands earlier in the year, get a second crack at Mr. Marino and the Dolphins. JR?
I'll say Marino beats them at home.
I'll take the Dolphins, too.
Marino, 29 of 36, 288 yards, 4 touchdowns. Jets get pummeled 45-3.
Wow. A perfect week for yours truly. 14, and Kelly, I think you had 11. Did you get three wrong?
He got the Eagles wrong. He got the Cardinals Chiefs wrong. Yeah.
And then this one.
And he got the Saints wrong.
Okay.
So he got three.
So I am up 2 now overall in the whole season. Let's see. 18 and 6 is what? 24, so I have 38. Kelly, you have 22 and 8, 36. 38-36.
Mm.
It was a big week for me.
Yeah, that's impressive.
It was good, very good. Good week. Good week. And our next time we do this, probably be close to the end of the season, so we'll see what's going on. All right, let us go quickly. There were two games in the NHL on this evening, and all our teams were involved. Only two games, though. At the Saddle Dome, Mr. Nelson, the Flames beat Mr. Gretzky and the Oilers 6-5.
Nice.
Like that for a little shootout action.
Yep.
And our Bruins, JR, win in Toronto 3-2.
Very good.
No games in the NBA. The NBA season began. Of course, that's our defending world champion Boston Celtics. But no games on this Monday evening. And one very well known NFL player was born on this date. November 24th, 1986. JR, see if you can guess. He's a tight end currently in the National Football League.
Currently.
Very well-known and very good tight end.
What year? 86?
Well, today. Well, on our date, yeah, 86.
All right, so he would be 31. Gronk.
No, it's not Gronk. Kel?
Will Ty.
Get a guess?
31.
Not Will Ty.
I don't know.
He's playing currently playing for his second team. I can't really say the teams because it'll give it away.
Mm. Will Ty.
It is not Will Ty. Anybody?
It's not that many good tight ends. Travis Kelce and Greg Olsen are the only other two tight ends. They don't fit the profile.
Yeah, I can't think of any. Yeah.
Formerly with the New Orleans Saints, currently with the Seattle Seahawks, Shockey. Mr. Jimmy Graham was born on this date in 1986. So there you go.
German
there, no. And there is your pop culture report, boys.
All right, let's go backstage where Gorilla Monsoon's with retired manager Lou Albano, but he has an update on George Steele because he was in the hospital wagon with him, as Lou Albano says. But the animal kicked him out of it. Lou says Kamala weighs 480 pounds, and he's never seen Steele in this sort of pain. Steele's in pain. He'll give a report by the end of the night, and he's very, very upset. Gorilla talks to a despondent hillbilly Jim, says he's deep trouble with his abdomen in shock. Jim says he was fond of his overalls. He's had them since he started wrestling. Jim said it's his own fault because he didn't watch Fuji like he said he would. He says having his back to Fuji is the worst thing he could have ever done. He says there'll be some way there has to be some way to get the draft to give him a chance to get even with Fuji, maybe in a tuxedo match. I mean, Hillbilly is on the verge of like just suicide and this pro.
Yeah.
So despondent. Gorilla then talks to Coco Beware, calls the most hottest one of this is like the worst phrasing of all time. One of the hottest pieces of property in professional wrestling today.
Yes, that's true.
Not good luck, Gorilla. Before the interview, Coco's with Frankie, puts over the greatness of the WWF, talks about his opponent tonight, Jimmy Jack Funk. He'll put his devastating dropkick on him, and it'll be all over. Gorilla then chats with the Islanders, and they talk about their hot streak and how they rely on each other in the ring and say they're ready for the match tonight. Hogan and Piper with, sorry, that's our next match. Have we talked about Coco yet? Was he on Saturday's main event last time?
Yeah, I think so. Yes, he was. He won. He wrestled last, I think.
I think you're right. I was making sure we're mixing up last.
Let's see. Let me check the last Saturday's main event back in.
No, he hasn't been on. I think he's on the next one. I think it's the first time we're talking about him.
Okay, this is first time then.
Yeah, okay, so we'll get his bio on it. All right, let's go to our nominal main event, and that is Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper taking on Paul Orndorff and Harley Race, a big tag team match set up last month. Some brilliant matchmaking. Great heat on the Heenan family. They all enter to the King music. Great heel presence. Gorilla reminds us that this came about last month in the pit. Bobby tries to rally the fans, but they just hate him. The crowd goes apeshit on Piper and Hogan as they enter, blowing up for both men. We get a big brawl as the bell sounds with Orndorff and Race driven from the ring. Hogan and Piper tease hitting each other and then tear off their shirts and throw them in each other's faces. Race and Orndorff return, but Hogan and Piper win another brawl that ends with Piper working over Race's arm. Gorilla talks about the past between Hogan and Piper and says they probably aren't thrilled to be partners tonight. Piper debates tagging Hogan, but does it reluctantly. Hogan pummels the arm as well and tags Piper back in as the beating continues. The tags keep coming, each with a bit more conviction. Hogan hits the big boot. He and Piper keep taking turns beating the piss out of Harley's arm. Race finally turns the tide with a side suplex on Piper and then tags into Orton, who buries an elbow to the throat off the middle rope. Orndorff kicks Piper to the floor, and as Roddy comes back in, Orndorff levels him with a clothesline and tags Race, who drops a hard elbow. Hogan tries to come in and help out, but that allows a double team. Race and Orndorff use their power offense and tags to keep Piper grounded in trouble, eventually trapped in a chin lock. Piper breaks free and gets a sunset flip on Orndorff for two, but gets trapped and put in trouble again. The crowd just freaks out anytime Piper gets close to tagging Hogan, but he can't get there. Race suplexes Piper and tags Orndorff. Piper gets a flurry, but the Heenan boys trap him in the corner until Hulk makes a save, and that backfires because it allows more double teams. Piper just keeps trying to escape for the tag, and then finally withstands a headbutt and just dives at Hogan and tags him. Hogan comes in and mauls both guys, unloading with strikes and an atomic drop to Race, follows with an axe bomber and a leg drop, but Orndorff makes a save. Things break down into a big brawl with Hogan beating the crap out of Heenan, too. Orndorff accidentally clotheslines Race, and Piper covers for the win despite not being the legal man. Piper just leaves as Heenan, Orndorff, and Race work over Hogan, who eventually fights them all off and cleans house. I get wanting to keep Piper as a loner, but this made him kind of look like a pussy to just leave. Like, he doesn't, I don't know, he didn't like even make a showing of it. He just kind of walked off. Instead of like fighting off the guys he hates, it's not like he was helping Hogan. Hogan was kind of helping him. I don't know. It just felt kind of weird for a guy that's trying to turn face. This was an awesome match, just nuclear heat the whole time. Everyone was crisp and efficient. There was zero wasted movement, nothing slow, just a manic tag match. I thought to really climb up the star ladder, it had to be a little bit longer and have maybe just a bit more of that heat segment. But as it is, it's just tremendous. Great storyline mixed in. Race really showing his value lately to WWF, a veteran that can still go and help flush out the upper mid card in these main events when needed. Kelly, I went 3.5 on this one.
Yeah, so did I. I'm a huge fan of this match. I've seen it several times over the years. This time I really appreciated just the whole atmosphere, the electricity. You know, Bobby comes in, takes the mic, and he's just getting pelted with garbage. The crowd is just beyond electric at the beginning. And yeah, here we go. Brawl as soon as Hogan enters the ring. Just the whole ripping off the shirts and throwing them at each other was great. I just loved all the Piper Hogan stuff. Yeah. How, yeah, I mean, they hated each other, you know, from all of 1985. And Piper had been the biggest heel in the territory until recently. So I like it. I like when two guys that have a past and now they're on the same side. But, you know, they got to acknowledge that at some point they didn't like each other. And it makes sense, Piper leaving, I think, at the end, because he was just sort of there, you know, for the match. And then, you know, you can't erase all those months that he feuded with Hogan. And I think it's a nice touch that he just is like, okay, I'll be there for the match for you, Hogan. But after it's over, you're on your own, buddy. And, you know, we may never team again. So it's consistent. Piper's, you know, the character he's trying to portray at this time is kind of, you know, the...
Yeah, but he's never been Piper's never been like a coward, though. Like, it just felt cowardly. Like, I don't know. It's not like he's being a loner, really, because I guess to me it would have worked if Hogan asked him to be a team and, like, fight guys he was feuding with, and Piper said yes and then left him. Like, this was Piper hates right. Orndorff and Heenan in a race, like, and he has a chance to beat on them some more. Like, why does he just leave? You know what I mean? Like, that... It was more that than leaving Hogan alone. Like, it just made him look kind of a pussy that he didn't go down swinging and fighting. Like, that's the Piper way, not just bailing and getting the fuck out of there.
That's
like,
right.
It just felt kind of weird, like, with guys he hates in the ring. You know, it would have been one thing if, like, someone he wasn't feuding with came out and attacked Hogan and then he left him. I don't know. It was just weird that his heated rivals are still out there and he's gone. Like, that's not the Piper way.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, he was working through a few things with what type of character he wanted to portray here. If he wanted to be like an over the top baby face, or if he wanted to be more of a tweener, and here he's definitely in the tweener phase of the character. Yeah. I think in his head, like in the character's head, he's like, you know, they won the match. That's enough. Hogan's getting a beat down. I kind of like seeing that, 'cause I liked beating up Hogan when I was a heel, and you know, he doesn't mind seeing Hogan get mauled by two guys. I think he still takes enjoyment from that.
Yeah, but they don't play that up at all. We don't see him.
No,
like,
I know. I'm trying to. I'm stretching.
I know. It was just done awkwardly. Like, he's not in the aisle giggling or laughing or just kind of smirking. Right. He's just gone. He's just like vanished. Like, he doesn't exist.
I guess. Well, they wanted Hogan to be alone at the end, right? Because he was going to do the pose down. So you could have
Piper help him fight off, and then Hogan invites him to pose, and he kind of flips him off and walks. I don't know. I mean, there's better ways they could have done it.
Yeah.
Race. Good. I finished, and I have a comment on Race.
No. You go with Race. Yeah. Go.
Race. I'm really been. He's gained a lot of steam in my eyes, and you know, with this project we're working on around the corner, like this run of Race has me kind of considering him more than I probably ever would have. Because when you're living in a Science Event pay-per-view world, you don't really see much of Race until, I mean, really, you don't see anything until like 3, you know what I mean? And in 87, he's got the fun Hogan stuff, but not a ton else. But seeing how versatile he was in this early run in 86, and, you know, seeing him work his way up and be in this main event picture and be like such a good utility player, like that he can just oscillate from wherever on the card and have good matches. Like, we've seen everything good out of him so far, and he just blends in so well. He works hard, and the King gimmick he's made work. You know, it could have been goofy, and if you didn't see it evolve, it feels goofy. I kind of want to see, is the King of the Ring footage out there at all from 86, the tournament?
I don't believe anything other than maybe
I doubt it.
Still photos, I think. Yeah.
I was just curious if there's anything to watch from that run, but I'm sure there's some Boston stuff to check out that's available for him and other house shows. But he's someone that's climbed into like contention for me just watching some of this 86 stuff with him. Like this match is a big one for him for me.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of race from this period in the last few years, and yeah, I've been impressed most times. You know, I didn't have a super high opinion of race going into rewatching this stuff, but he's been really good in all these matches. Pete and I talked about this once, and Pete said that he thought race had something to prove coming in. You know, at this time he was getting older, right. And but he was in New York now. It was the big time, and there was all these big stars. And I think he was, you know, extra motivated to mix it up with these guys.
You can see it. He's working his ass off.
Really good.
Yeah,
he is. He was. And yeah, it's easy to kind of make fun of this run or dismiss it because he, you know, he goes full on gimmick with the crown and the robe and all that, and dyes his hair blonde. And you'd think, oh, he's become a cartoon character, but really he hasn't. He's still the same old Harley Race, and he's pushed well, and he gets to wrestle with the biggest stars. So it's actually a really good run that deserves exploration by fans of the era for sure.
I wish he had a better opponent at three. That's the last thing I'll say.
But well, yeah, that's
the thing. Could have showcased him better.
I mean, for match quality wise, for sure. But for a star opponent, JYD was still a big name, and the dynamic of that feud worked well. You know, with him being the king and JYD being a peasant or whatever. And
he has that six man too that I watched with Jeff on Jeff Learns Wrestling.
Yep.
That was great too from early 87. Yep. So yeah, no, he's definitely making a. I don't know if he's got enough to get in the 100, but he's making me have to think, which he was an afterthought, you know, 6 months ago. But
yeah, no, I agree. He has it's a real underrated run in WWF actually. And so I'll just quickly finish up on the match. I mean, I've gone over the crowd. They were standing the whole time. This was one of the best reactions for a match we've seen, where you could tell everybody in the front row was standing up. Nobody was taking their eyes off of the. This was one of the big matches of this era, basically. The Hogan Piper team. I mean, that was just such a huge deal, and of course the extra layer with the Hogan Orndorff feud going on. It was like a good mix of talent in this match, and I went 3.5. I was thinking about 4, but it's like you said, JR, a little short, not as much meat to it as you would have for a 4-star match, but as far as like a super entertaining spectacle, this is as good as it gets. I would have loved to have been in the crowd that night. Great atmosphere. And yeah, it's good to see Hogan cooking again. He was missing for a while. Now here we go. And Piper's in a pretty hot little period here as well. So yeah, it's everybody worked well. Great. Heenan was great too. Really good match.
I gave it 3.5 as well. And yeah, your runtime's 8:15. It should have been at least 5 minutes longer. I mean, this crowd is nuclear. And you knew it was coming. And everybody put their boots on. I'm going to talk about Harley in a minute, because I agree with both of you guys 150%. I'll get to Harley in a minute. I want to talk about Piper, because I'm stunned at how well that was crafted. I agree with you, JR, that to a certain extent, Piper just leaving is dumb. But there's an interesting thought process of whether just winning the match was enough for Piper and he could just walk away. All right, I did my thing. I beat them. Fuck it, I'm gone. Orndorff's your problem. All I wanted was a win from him. See ya. Or should he have stuck around, continued brawling, and then fucking decked Hogan and left? No, I'm only kidding. That wouldn't work. And then beat him for the title for WrestleMania.
I think there's an in-between there. He doesn't have to deck him, but he doesn't have to just run away, you know?
Well, that's true, too. But I usually, and this is, you got to give WWF credit. You got to give the booking credit for this, because normally they won't remember crap like that. Like, they won't, I mean, it's fairly recent that Piper was a heel and feuding with Hogan. I mean, it was what? Exactly a year and a couple of weeks they were wrestling for the title at the Wrestling Classic. So yeah, it's not recent history, but normally you have two baby faces like Piper and Hogan. You just ride the baby face train and forget everything else.
Right.
That's usually how things worked back then. Mm-hmm. But here, Piper is Piper, and you're not going to, you know, that he's whatever he's done in the 3 years or, you know, almost 2 full years he's been with the company, You can't forget stuff like that. So the fact that they acknowledged it in 1986 WWF, which normally never happens, is pretty impressive. So I was happy that they actually used common sense instead of kayfabe, you know, idiocy for the sake of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, they couldn't. Piper's, you know, his actions and demeanor, it was so, I mean, it was so well documented. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't brush
right.
over it. This isn't just like, you know, a minor guy turning or something. I mean, this is, there's no way. They would look really fucking stupid if Austin Hogan and Piper are best buds. You know what I mean? So, yeah, they kind of had to.
But you're right that he could have hung around a little bit. But I tell you something, Piper showed more ass in this match than he ever showed anywhere. I mean, he took a decent beating in the middle of this match, which he normally never does. So I was applauding that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Orndorff's a stud. You know, whatever, whether winning the title or not is irrelevant. Orndorff was at the top of his game. This I don't think he was ever better in his career. And I watched a lot of 82 Mid-South. I don't think he was ever better than he was right at this moment in time. He was awesome. And Hogan's Hogan. It's nice to see him in MSG. I feel like we never see him anymore.
Right.
Harley. I'm a huge Harley fan. Former NWA World Champion, 7-time. It was cool to see him in the company. The only goofy thing that the fucking crown had to have, like, the little strap to put under his chin.
Yeah.
He looked like a fucking, I don't know, chocolate syrup mascot or something. It looked totally idiotic. But having said that, he's Harley. So, no, is he, you know, 1980 Harley? No, he's not even 1983 Harley. But he's Harley Race. And now that we have the ability, and like you said, JR, you know, we used to just pretty much watch pay-per-view Saturday's Main Event Harley, which wasn't much, and then, you know, the TV squashes. But now to sit here and watch him have some of these long-form matches, and I've watched a lot of Boston Garden ones this year too, and Spectrum, he still is one of the most fantastic workers, even in 1986 when he was probably, I would assume, Kelly, probably what? At least late 40s, maybe hit 50 at this point.
I think he was.
No, I don't think he's that old. I think he was pretty young. Actually.
Yeah, he was early 40s. I want to say.
Okay, he's
was,
probably around. All right, that makes sense.
Yeah,
well, he was born in 43, so yeah, so he would have been
40.
Yeah.
He was 43.
Yeah.
So you go, perfect. Yeah. So he was still in good shape, but you're right, JR. Visibility was the problem, and I'd like to think and to cross over here for our big project, visibility is a big problem with a lot of these guys that you think, ah, fuck it, he's only here for like a year. He had 2-3 matches. Oh, he fought Hogan cool once, but not enough. But visibility, and now with the ability you can to see more of these Harley matches, maybe he is one of the 100 greatest. Even in the small template, you know, he was here, what, 2.5 years? He was here longer than people remember him being.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? And I'll put Harley on any top 100 list of anything. And he was already on my list. I'm not sure where I'll put him yet, but he was on my list. No doubt. He's Harley Race. He's one of the greatest of all time. And he wasn't old yet. He had a little plump, but he always kind of looked like that, though. He was never trim. I mean, Jesus, that he looks better now, though. Kel, you remember the Harley Backlund match from the Garden? It's on that, what is that, 80,
yep.
I think. He had, forget a beer gut. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
He was very pleasantly plump in that match.
Yeah.
He looks better here.
Yeah, he's more muscular. He's
you know?
Leaner.
He's Harley. Yeah. So I agree with both of you 100%. JR, I'm glad you're kind of thinking about it. I had him on my list already. He's Harley Race.
Yeah, I know he's Harley Race, but I just didn't think he had the volume in the WWF.
No, I know.
I've seen more matches of his now that makes me think, okay, I've seen some really, really good stuff. I mean, you already have the Hogan Steiner's Main Event, you got this, and that 6-man alone, those are three really high-level matches from a time period that's unknown for great in-ring matches. And
correct.
Seeing how the King gimmick came about gives me a little bit better feeling about the gimmick itself. You know, just seeing how much more of a veteran utility player he was just gives me a better feel for his run. So, yeah, I think he fits well. So there you go, a very red-hot main event. I think it's a if you haven't seen it, it's worth checking out for sure. It's a really damn good match.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Utterly fantastic. 3.5 stars.
Yep.
Four more minutes, I'd have given it four stars. You're right, Kel.
Yeah.
Four more minutes. We could have taken nine, you know, 4 minutes off that Steve Lombardi debacle.
Yes.
So there you go. Pogan and Piper win. Piper pins Harley, which I think is kind of a neat combination there. You got to keep Orndorff strong, obviously.
Yeah.
And a great main event.
Okay.
And then we go from that tag.
Oh, boy. All right, so here's our next big tag match, or little tag matches. The Karate Kid and Pepper Gomez take on Little Tokyo and Lord Littlebrook as the...
Pepper.
Pepe.
Pepe Gomez. Didn't he pitch for somebody?
Pepper Gomez.
Yeah, he was... Wasn't he a cardinal in the 30s?
Pepe Gomez. Pepper is a better name than Pepe. The world famed midget wrestlers is... The Fink says, and we have some holiday midget hijinks up next as Pepe Gomez arrives. He has quite the look, I thought. Karate Kid is an absurdly absurdly blatant ripoff gimmick. Like, I mean, you can at least change the fucking name. Like, Karate Kid. I mean, okay, I wonder what he's supposed to be. And I was like, at least come up with something. Kung Fu Kid, anything. You know what I mean? Just like something different than the fucking Karate Kid. Just completely ripping off the movie. Which I think had already come out, right? When did that come out?
Yeah.
This one came out in 84. I think we're already on part. Yeah. I think we're already on. Well, yeah. We did the Glory of Love, right? So Karate Kid Part 2 is already out. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there you go. Come up with a better name, you idiot. Gorilla has a great line here too. What do you expect them to call? What would you expect them to call a midget from Tokyo? Tokyo Kid. Al calls Littlebrook a little beast as Gorilla and Al put over the great physical shape of Kid and say maybe we'll get a nice karate showdown between him and Tokyo. Get the usual shenanigans here as Gorilla and Al are just chatting away. Littlebrook's hair, by the way, is a fucking masterpiece with this thing he's got on his head. Kid is pretty skilled.
No, I said I know.
Yeah, it's
and
great.
The hair was quite fluffy, too.
Karate Kid is pretty skilled. He's in great shape. A girl asks if Littlebrook is a legitimate lord like Al is, and Al isn't sure of Littlebrook's lineage. So we get some talk about the lordship process, and I have to go renew on a regular basis. And said he was due to go in early 1987 to renew his membership. Kid is a nimble little fellow, according to Al. Gorilla says he has tears on his face as these little guys really make him laugh. Fine enough comedy. The crowd's pretty into it. I guess that counts for something. Kind of felt long. The back end dragged a bit. But I am going to give it a slight bump from my usual midget match grade. This felt a bit normal, better than normal. Had some decent heat. I went 1.5 stars on this one. I thought they actually had a better flow than normal, and Gorilla now made me laugh throughout all this. And Gorilla, like, saying how he's in tears at the midgets was so over the top that it came back around to being funny. But anyway, Scott, what'd you think of this?
I gave it a dud. No, I'm only kidding. I didn't give it a dud. I gave it a star. They did work hard. I'll give them that. Now, the version we watched was from the old 24/7, and it was like Midget Mania must have been the theme of the month. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a terrible month that must have been. Mm-hmm. And and Hillbilly had like an inset, and he was talking about it, or, you know, inset interview. But this was fine, but this was another fun chance for Gorilla to trash poor Gil Roman again. He had trashed him a lot lately, and he's like, oh, this referee just totally ruined this match. He's poor guy. Like, I agree with you. He's like so sympathetic. We should cry for the fact that midgets got screwed. It's the stupidest thing ever, but it was funny, though. It was funny.
The lordship stuff made me laugh. Like, Al talking about the process to go re-up his lordship in England was, I don't know.
Like they're a little club, you know.
I don't know the lineage of Lord Littlebrook.
But he asks that every fucking time.
Yeah, no, I know.
Oh, my God.
They do. I mean, you pick up on it. They have a lot of very similar comments and conversations month to month. I mean, you really pick up on it watching them all in order like this.
Like, every time Hercules – I meant to mention this earlier in the show, but every time Hercules wrestles, Alfred always says that I saw him in Tampa once.
Yes, I saw him down in Florida when he was just getting started.
He was doing very well. And, of course, as you mentioned, the Pothos back, so we had to hear the word supple. But anyway, I mean, it's ludicrous, you know, and Lord and fucking Littlebrook with that crazy hair and that weird like Indian headdress or whatever the thing was. It was absolutely ridiculous. But they're like a bona fide tag team. This got to be what, like the sixth or seventh time we've seen Littlebrook and Tokyo tag. Yeah. It's got to be like the sixth or seventh time we've seen
the nimble little fellows.
Nimble little fellows. I gave it a star. It was fine. It was actually one of the better ninja tags that we've had. It wasn't. 1330 is a bit much for a fucking midget match, but
yeah.
It was. But honestly, it was after the main event. You needed a spell. People had to go probably take a dump or whatever. So I mean, it was fine to have this match long to fucking give people a break. So I gave it a star, Kel.
Yeah. No, it was definitely a piss break match. Yeah, you could see people just mulling about constantly, not really paying attention to it. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't. It was so long. And I'm pretty tolerant of midget matches. Like, I give them, you know, a chance. And I wanted this one to be good, but it just went on too long to the point where I just wanted it to end, and it just wasn't doing it for me. Midget Mania, yeah, the big hype throughout the whole show. And, yeah, Hillbilly Jim even cuts an insert promo randomly in the middle of this. They were really going all out. Hayes was definitely enjoying it, almost wetting himself at one point over shtick that he must have seen literally hundreds of times, because this was just a typical midget shtick match. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was dull. I went a half star.
Oh, wow. I feel like I'm always the low man on the midgets.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Very surprised.
No, I'm high on the midgets this time.
All right, high man on the midgets.
We go back. Actually, we stay in the ring. Hillbilly Jim comes out in his little skeevies and demands a tuxedo match with Mr. Fuji. Says it'll be the first time he ever wears a such a fucking yeah. The first time I'll ever wear a tuxedo in Madison Square Garden. Okay, Jim. I don't think
I hope so.
No one besides Fink and Gorilla Monsoon wear tuxedos. Promises to skin Fuji and take him right down to his shorts. Jim throws his overalls in the crowd where the fans start fucking fighting over them. And then Jim storms off. Some guy like yanks them out of someone else's hands.
Yeah, I know.
A lot of anger. Poor Jim throwing his coveted overalls into the crowd. But there you go. So then we head back to the ring for that debut we mentioned earlier. That is Coco Beware taking on Jimmy Jack Funk. And Coco, but real name, of course, James Ware, spent his early days in Mid-South, Georgia, and other NWA territories. Coco Ware was his name at the time. Kind of, you know, didn't have a lot of success, but paid his dues working around the territories. Ended up floundering until late 81 when he found his way to Memphis and was a referee in a title match between Jerry Lawler and Dream Machine. Ware screwed Lawler out of the match and turned heel, joining the First Family, changing the name to Sweet Brown Sugar. And heated up from there, became Stagger Lee for a while as well, and then joined the Pretty Young Things, the PYTs, where he's most well known for during the tag team tournament. That happened when he worked with Norvell Austin, and they went on from there throughout Memphis and Mid-South and the UWF. Changed his name to Coco Beware, and of course that is where he showed up in the WWF as the Birdman Coco Beware with his macaw named Frankie. He came out to Morris Days the Bird for a while. It had more bright outfits and colorful sunglasses and kind of just a more of a happy-go-lucky face and not the kind of brutal, angry heel he was once known as. Kelly, any kind of knowledge or background or insight on Coco before his WWF run?
I've seen a few of his highlights in Memphis. I mean, the scaffold match that he has with Bill Dundee in 1982 is a must-watch. Best 2 out of 3 falls scaffold match. it's just crazy. It's the best scaffold match I've ever seen. And then he's very well regarded. I know he has a match against Flair that a lot of people rave about, but I've never seen it at that time. And yeah, he was a different character. He was a heel often. He's really known for his squash matches in Memphis,
yes,
where he just beats the hell out of the jobber, you know, in epic fashion. To where there's like people have made like comps, I think, of just Coco Beware squash matches from Memphis. Yeah.
It's funny, too, because he's considered such a joke to the point where, like, well, if Coco's in the Hall of Fame, anyone can be. And it's like,
I know.
It's like, do some homework. I mean, he was, you know, a legitimate star. And I know that was kind of pre-JDF really going outside the box, but they were starting to. Like, I think he's just a legitimate entry when you look at his career and you know, what he brought to the ring, especially in Memphis.
Yeah, if you include the Memphis stuff. Yeah. But, you know, when he was first in WWF, he was focused. He was, you know, pushed, you know, not super high, but he was always kind of always on TV. He was a very well-known character, always in the magazines, featured heavily on the Piledriver album coming up.
And he's not as like hokey and goofy as he'd be later, like in these early months. Yeah. He's definitely still more kind of serious, even with the bird.
For sure. He would definitely become more cartoonish, but no, he was a popular character at first anyway.
Well, here he is. Jimmy Jack Funk enters. Lou Albano shows up at ringside, says he's got a report from the ambulance driver. Steele flipped out near Central Park, escaped the ambulance, and was absconded while running through the park, and he's back at the hospital. Coco enters to a nice reaction, flapping around, carrying Frankie, who flies off Coco's arm and hits the ground for a minute. Coco, ton of energy, just a really exciting atmosphere as he comes out. Jimmy Jack Funk uses his power to control early, but Coco hangs in and is able to slam him and dropkick him to the floor. Gorilla notes that Frankie looks away whenever Coco is in trouble. Coco continues to frustrate and control his gorilla, says he's never seen Jimmy Jack without the mask, but he doesn't know if he's hiding any kind of deformities or burns. Coco bounces out of a test of strength and lands a nice dropkick and arm drags Jimmy Jack to the floor. Jimmy Jack comes in and grabs a side headlock, but Coco works free and lands another flurry that sends him scurrying outside once more. The tide turns when Jimmy Jack catches Coco in a leap and drops him with a hot shot across the top rope. He kicks and punches away and gets a swinging neckbreaker and grinds a chinlock. Coco breaks free and mows through Jimmy Jack with a hot flurry, capped by a top rope dropkick and a stiff brainbuster for the win. Kind of bland in spots, but I thought Coco looked great. A lot of strong offense, full of energy, really bouncing all around. And he has the goods to be a star as far as in-ring, and even his look is pretty good. Yeah. A fun match, one of Jimmy Jack's better showings. I went 2 stars, Scott. Who went first last time? Scott, Kelly, you're up.
It's Kelly's turn.
Okay.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, about Coco, he was very popular. I remember when he first came in, it felt like he was going to be one of the bigger stars because he was given a lot of, you know, vignettes, and there was a lot of hype surrounding his debut for weeks and weeks. For me, this one comes down to Jimmy Jack Funk just not being very good in the ring. I think he stinks really, really bad, and that dragged this match down for me. I gave it a star. It was all about what, Coco could do around him. But, the match just was, I don't know. Funk's just not a good heel. It was pretty dull at times. And there wasn't much heat. Like, the crowd, ever since the big main event, just hasn't recovered, basically. There's another thing to praise the big tag for, is it was so hot that the crowd is just killed dead by every.
Yes. Although I thought Coco's entrance had a lot of excitement. Like, everyone was kind of up and dancing, and that was kind of cool.
Yeah, because he was new, and he was, like I said, he was given a lot of hype coming in. So, he was a fun character. He had the parent. Like, the whole thing was very over, and he had a cool look. And, he was a cool character at this time. But, I just didn't really think much of the match. Although the Brain Buster was great. I love how he does it. He makes it look really good. He threw about 20 drop kicks in the match. He maybe was relying on that a bit too much. And hopefully there'll be bigger and better things for Coco going ahead.
I'm going to agree with JR on this one. I gave it 2 stars. Although I do agree that, I mean, is Jimmy Jack Funk even worth being a character anymore? I mean, we have no Terry, we have no Haas, so who gives a shit? I mean, really?
Yeah. He's just a jobber. I mean, that's all.
Yeah, at this point, he's pretty much just fodder now. I thought Coco was awesome. I mean, it was a great package. I agree, JR. The energy level was pretty hot. Obviously, there wasn't much left for the crowd or for these guys because of the main event. You know, pretty much emptied the tank, but. Your match time was 8:46. And, Coco, I thought, looked great. He is a big dropkick guy, but that's his gimmick. I mean, that's his gig. Honestly, you have to think, Kel, for 1986 standards, dropkick is like a plancha or a fucking, a shooting star or something. So he definitely, if he's going to continue to move up the ladder or do whatever he's going to do, he obviously needs to kind of expand the repertoire a little bit. I mean, you talked about his past. I want to bring that up in a minute. Watching the great Memphis set that I have, there was a few PYT matches, and him and Norvell were awesome. So I had a lot of respect for Coco even coming in here, just based on his history, because I think he's a great worker. But Jimmy Jack is just trash at this point. But it was a good guy to put Coco over with. And I thought it was a fun little sprint for 8:46. So I'll give it 2 stars. All and right. Now we get to our evening main event.
Yes, final match of the evening. Yes. And that is a big tag team match with the Dream Team still hanging around, taking on the Islanders, who of course won the big tag team battle royal last month. Dream Team's out with Johnny V, and Hammer has a gorgeous robe on, looking quite regal. Islanders march out to a nice welcome. Gorilla talks about how impressive they've been and what a big win here could mean. Al gushes over Tama while calling Haku steady and reliable. Gorilla talk about a brand new tag team, the Can-Am Connection, and they mention the Hearts, Tito, and Pedro, and a few other teams. They discuss the depth of the division. I feel like this Tito Pedro team only exists in people's minds.
Yeah, exactly.
We haven't actually seen it. We keep hearing about it.
They were on TV. They would occasionally wrestle, though, okay. Against jobbers. But yeah, it was other than the one big match they had against the Dream Team. I think that was it.
Yeah, I saw some championship wrestling shows. Yeah. Tito and Pedro team together. I did see.
Yeah.
That's a lot of hot flowing Latin blood in there. Hammer and Haku open things up with some feeling out as Gorilla says the winners of this should be the new top contenders for the Bulldogs. Johnny V pops in on commentary, puts over the Islanders a bit, but says New York City's the home of the Dream Team and justice will prevail. Gorilla mentions the nightmare of WrestleMania 2. Won't let it go. Yet again. As Hammer chops away at Haku, who takes Hammer over, and him and Tama work tags and focus the arm. Hammer escapes and tags in Beefcake, but the Islanders keep control and work his arm as well. Gorilla credits Johnny V for all he contributes to the team. As Beefcake escapes the armbar and releases two pretty nice leapfrogs, but Haku catches him with a crossbody for two. Beefcake keeps trying to find daylight, but the Islanders are all over him with quick tags and focused limb work. V pops in again, this time bitching about the cheating and double teaming. Beefcake takes Tama down, and the two trade chops in the corner. Al says V has a point, as Beefcake tags out, and we reset with Hammer and Tama. Hammer levels Tama with a punch and chop and crunches him with an inverted pile driver for two. Hammer was great there, just teasing a shoulder breaker, then evilly smirking and lowering him down to the pile driver. Tama climbs back in, but Hammer lays the wood to him. Tama gets a crossbody for two, but can't take advantage as Hammer goes right back on top with power strikes. Beefcake comes in and keeps control, working a quick chinlock and tagging Hammer. Hammer goes to the figure four, but Tama counters into a small package for two. Gorilla mentions that the figure four sealed the casket on Strongbow's career, Chief J. Strongbow's career, and put Tito in the hospital, really putting over the move. Excuse me. Tama finds a window, takes out Hammer before tagging Haku, who cleans house on Beefcake and Hammer. Haku bashes Beefcake with headbutts, and Tama comes off the top rope with a high cross body. Hammer breaks up the pin, and things break down from there. Tama headbutts V, but that allows Hammer to hoist him up and crotch him on the top rope. Beefcake covers, and even with the referee delayed, gets the three count for the win. A really tough loss for the Islanders, but a nice win for the Dream Team, who refused to go down quietly into the night. They have held strong here as a team, still maintaining credibility and hanging around. Good match, but a bit below expectations overall. Fluid teamwork. Tama, again, stands out as a star. And I thought Beefcake looked improved as well, as always, as he has the last few months. Fun closing match. I went 2.5, Scott.
Yes, I went 2 stars. 2.5. I just love watching the Dream Team. They're awesome. Mm-hmm. Hammer's robe is great. His in-ring work is great. I mean, when we do our end-of-year awards, we talk about like an actual wrestler of the year. Put the Hammer on that list.
Yeah.
If you're just talking pure in-ring, I mean, he's awesome. Beefer, I mean, we've said it enough. I mean, he's definitely graduating to a level that he can, you know, move on whenever that happens. But it's definitely more of a 50-50 thing rather than just Hammer doing all the work and Beefcake doing all the kind of the easy stooging. I am a little perplexed why the Islanders lost. Well, not really, but it is funny that they win the Battle Royal and then 1 month later have to lose. It was very strange. But I thought the match was really good. Your time, 13-13, so a good meaty last match of the evening. I will say that if the Islanders were going to lose, I thought it'd be to a heel tag team that was a little bit higher up the ladder, maybe the Hart Foundation, because obviously they're not in Tingly Coliseum. But, yeah. It's fine. Again, Dream Team I have no problems with. Love Hammer. Love Beefer. But it's a shame that the Islanders had a job because, you know, they were kind of on a roll after winning the Battle Royal and two singles matches. Three wins last month in October. But a good finish. I thought it was a good good finishing match for the show, for the evening. An evening of fun kind of surprises and fun entertainment. It's a very entertaining house show. May not necessarily have to do with the in-ring, but it was an entertaining house show. And I thought this was a great great final match, Cal.
Yeah, it was good. It was hurt by its placements on the card being at the very end. The crowd's spent. They're leaving in droves throughout this match. And you could sense that the teams weren't actually going all out, I don't think, in this spot. At least at first, it felt like they were kind of just going through the motions. But it picked up when Haku got the hot tag. And the finish, it was building to a good finish, but then we had a horrible finish because Tama was pinned for 10 seconds. Yet another one of those where the ref's out of place or whatever, and So Tama had to sell a 10 count. Basically, I hate when that happens. And I don't understand why they lost this match after winning the Battle Royal. They, you know, that's a huge win for them. It was the main event on the previous card. And now the next month they're losing to a team that's kind of playing out the stretch. I'm not sure. Maybe they'd already soured on Tama again for some backstage shenanigans or something. It seems like there was no need for them to lose the very next month.
Yeah.
But these two teams have a really good match around the same time, maybe in December 86, from the Boston Garden, I believe. So I would recommend viewers, or the sorry, listeners, to check that out.
The only thing was, did they feel like there was no... I don't know. I mean, the Dream Team didn't really need the win. Did this feel like the Islanders, because the Bulldogs are teams, they don't want them getting too many wins? And it's, I mean, this is probably way deeper than they were thinking. Like, does it look weird that they're not getting a title shot, so they're kind of keeping them down until the Bulldogs lose, you know, something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's strange, because it seemed like giving them the win in the Battle Royal meant that they had plans for them, yeah, but it doesn't seem like it now. So yeah, I was kind of, and I love the Dream Team, but yeah, I was kind of hoping for an Islanders win here to give them a little extra shot going forward. But I went 2 stars. Just for me, the placement at the end, you never really get too much for the very final match at MSG, kind of you know, last one here, turn out the lights sort of match.
Right.
You know, but like I said, check out that Boston Garden match. I think it's December 86 to see these two teams really have a really heated match. That's really good.
Cool. All right. That'll do it for this.
Before we get to the awards.
Okay.
Did we do the King of the Ring? Did we mention it at all when Harley? We did?
Okay. I think so. Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure. We were talking about it, and I'm like, did we actually? It was July 14th.
Yeah, I think we talked about it when Harley
at Foxborough. I think we did. Yeah, I think we did the tournament. Okay. All right, never mind.
Okay.
We're good.
All right, time for those awards to wrap up the show here as we put a bow on another MSG outing. So let's start with our match of the night. I think it's a pretty easy one across the board, and that is Hogan and Piper versus Race and Orndorff.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. The Cousin Jr., the worst match of the night. It was a tough one because, like, there's bad matches, but, like, nothing really bad, and some of the stuff was bad, but had good stuff. I don't know. I thought Hillbilly Morocco was the worst match of the night, but I had the post-match brawl, so that saved a bit, but I still went Hillbilly and Morocco. Or Jeff Kelly?
I went with the midget match. Yeah, there wasn't... Yeah, I didn't throw out any duds this time.
Yeah.
There was just a few, especially post... main events, the last few matches just didn't have much steam behind them, and so I went with the midget match. That one was, you know, in the death spot following the main event, and I just thought it was too long. What was it, 13, almost 14 minutes for a midget tag?
All right, yeah, you won me over. Yeah. I'll go with that. Yeah. What do you have, Scott?
I actually am not voting the midgets. It wasn't that bad. I wanted to do the opener because I fucking hated the way Orton kind of dog the match from a work rate perspective, but I'm actually going to go with Morocco and Hillbilly. I normally don't trash Morocco matches, you know me, but as I said earlier, the in-ring part was just not good. Everything after it was great. So, and believe it or not, the midget match didn't offend me as much as normal midget matches do. So I'm going to go with Hillbilly and Morocco.
All right. For MVP, the Hogan Award. I hate saying, oh, just everyone in the main event, because it's so late, but everyone in the main event. I mean, I couldn't really just pick one. I thought all four guys were in all five.
Yes.
Heenan, too. I mean, I don't see how it's fair to single out any of them on this night. I thought they all worked their asses off.
I agree.
How about you, Kelly? I just went with everyone.
Well, I think I've always gone with just one MVP, but I'm actually breaking that streak here. I'm going to go with Hogan and Piper. Okay. I thought this was, you know, them together for the first time, you know, what heat they had, just so over, incredibly over. So yeah, I'm going to go with Hogan and Piper.
All right, and you're saying everyone, Scott?
Yes, I agree with you. Okay. I think the whole package worked.
All right, the Uncle Elmer for the LVP, least valuable person on the show. I went with Stephen Lombardi. I thought he was dog shit. I thought he looked awful. You know, Poffo carried him to something watchable, but he's a waste.
He's garbage. He's absolute garbage.
I'm going to go with Jimmy Jack Funk. He's someone that I really don't like, so it's not hard for me to be convinced to give him a worst worker award. Yeah, but I agree, Lombardi was crap too. There was a few solid picks on this show.
It's weird because there were solid picks for worst wrestler, but not like worst match. You know what I mean? It was kind of odd. There were a lot of guys got carried. Mm. They didn't really get paired off. All right, best moment of the night. I went with Hogan and Piper's entrance into the big brawl to open the match. What do you have, Kelly?
I went with just the crowd reaction for the main event. I was trying to think of how to sum it up and what to pick. I knew I had to pick something from the main event. I went with the electric crowd atmosphere, if that makes sense.
What do you have, Scott?
As much as I loved everything in the main event, I'm actually going to go with the best moment was Fuji's beatdown of Hillbilly.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good call.
Beating the piss out of him.
Yeah, no, that was a good one.
Yeah, or you could have went with Kamala's.
Yeah, no, this is a rare MSG show.
Rope drop, yeah.
Rare MSG show with a lot of like big moments. You know what I mean? Like we don't usually get that too often, so that's kind of cool. All right, the Arcidi Award for the most juiced. I went with Mr. Morocco this evening.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to see it. I have a feeling we're going to get a lot of those from him soon out.
I went with Billy Gerkanes. I was thinking back at the end, it was the last award that I gave out, and I blanked on Morocco. So, no, Morocco definitely could have been picked, but I'll go with Billy Jerk.
Okay. Wow. Different from everyone tonight, Kelly, pretty much. So.
That's
But that's the kind of show this was.
Yeah.
That's the kind of show this was.
A lot of
so
variance.
Much stuff to choose from, yeah.
All right, overall grade, probably one of my highest MSG card grades. I went 5.5. I really liked that main event. I didn't think anything was terrible. There wasn't much else like really good, so I can't like go super high. But 5.5 for me is pretty high on an MSG show. I haven't gone that high too often. So there you go, pretty good show in my eyes. What do you have, Scott?
I actually am giving it 5.5 as well. I had a lot of fun. That was a great show. Well entertained. It was great. I think what did I give a five? I gave the August House show 5.5, and I gave September a pretty good grade, and October's with me. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Lombardi's terrible performance aside, as well as Jimmy Jack, there was a lot of great fun moments and Fuji's beatdown and the main event. It was a fun show. 5.5 for me. Kel?
Well, yeah, it's 5.5 across the board. That's what I went with.
About time you agreed on something.
Rare triple count on the grade.
It is. Yeah, for me, this one was trending towards like 6 and one of my higher grades until we got to the post main event matches where the crowd just was done. So that it was a bit of a chore to finish the show the last half hour or so. But yeah, we've talked about the big moments. There was, you know, plenty of those. The main event tags, an all time, you know, spectacle, awesome spectacle. Great crowd until after the tag. But yeah, actually, I think I've only ranked a couple shows higher than 5.5, so it's up there for MSG 1986.
Well, there you go. Another one in the books. Great show, as always, here on the podcast. Had a lot of fun. Of course, we'll be back next week looking at the November 86 Saturday's Main Event, correct?
November 29th. Yes, Saturday's Main Event. Yep.
We'll have to Thanksgiving. So Scott and I will be flying solo or duo, I guess, for that one. And then in a couple weeks' time, we'll be talking December 86. But Kelly, this is it for you for 1986. As you'll be on vacation, we'll have our buddy Pete hopefully in the house for that one. Any really quick hit thoughts you want to give, or do you want to share them later as we get to 87? What do you prefer?
Yeah, I think when I'm back for January 87, we can do like a year in review.
Okay, that works.
That works. Cool.
We'll save it for then. So we'll be back then. Of course, new letters from Center Stage coming this Friday will be episode number 20, and the one and only Parv joined me and the chap called Alan. A little special concept show, so look forward to that. And, of course, check out everything to do with the PTBN Greatest Duty Wrestler Ever Project. The four-year consideration series has been great. Will has been churning those things out every other week. There's a ton of them out there. Be sure to listen. They're all great. Listens, a lot of cool guests, and really giving great and well-done breakdowns and considerations for all the candidates. The Google Doc that is shared on the Facebook page and elsewhere is completely up to date with kind of refresh the rules and the time period, and all the updated links to the audio and written pieces that have to do with the project are up as well. And be sure to check out Making the Cut. Aaron George and myself have done a couple of those. We have a third one planned coming pretty soon. So plenty of content. If you want to join the group, let us know. We'll add you to the Facebook page. Just reach out to me on social media. We'll get you added there as we get toward the end of the year and we start handing in ballots probably December-ish or so. So yeah, still plenty of time. Do a lot of research. Do a lot of learning. And start piecing your list together. Scott, I think it was a main event last week. You want to talk about that briefly?
Yes, there was. We had a great main event. The Godfather Nate Milton and I talked a little WWE and some interesting debates. And then again, Kel, your boy Travis came on to from Lucha Afterground to talk about Sexy Star and some other stuff going on Lucha Underground. So very good show. Good quick sprint. So check it out.
Very good. All right, so that'll do it. Be sure to subscribe to everything on iTunes, Place to Be Nation Wrestling, Place to Be Nation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only, Instagram, Tumblr, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BNation, shop with us, PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon as well. For Kelly and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you next Monday night, Science Made Event. Everyone take care and enjoy this music underneath us. It is from
think we might be wishing on the same bright star.
And when the night wind starts to sing a lonesome lullaby, it helps to think we're sleeping underneath the same big sky. Yeah.